recreation of
Ocella.
Amazing.
And welcome back, folks, to another episode of Ruminations of Red Rum. Today, I am your host, Brendan, Mr. Fangtastic. Hey. What was that?
I was just going, oh.
Oh, okay.
Just my little zappers. My just
your zappers. With us, as always, he's spooky, he's scary, and his hair is long and hairy. Nah, that didn't work. It's Ian with two E's. How you doing, Ian? Oh, your arms are pretty hairy. That's right.
Oh, you should see my legs. Look at this. Hold on. I gotta take my pants off.
Whoa, that thing is this small.
Jesus. Look at this.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't think they make condoms that small.
Have you ever seen those like joke ones at Spencer's where it's like it can fit the tip of your pinky?
Yeah, it's like a thumbnail.
Oh, it was the oversized.
Or like a thimble. That's what I meant. Not a thumbnail.
How you doing, Ian?
Doing good. Doing good.
Oh, wait. Where is your beverage?
I think I'm going out.
Classic.
Pretty sure I'm going
classic
out.
Ian.
I'm going to pick up like a 12-pack on the way home. And,
if you must, I'll go get one.
We are going to, while you're doing that, also with us, we need to talk about him. It's Kevin.
Kevin here. What's up?
How you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good.
Let's try to guess what Ian's been up to lately.
Oh, Godzilla.
Godzilla?
What?
King Kong.
Oh, dude, I love
Ian. You missed it. I introduced Kyle as Kevin.
Oh, hell yeah. You mean you introduced Kevin?
I introduced Kevin as Kevin. I'm sorry. Gotcha. So what is your beverage?
It's Simply Spiked Peach Kiwi.
Right.
Hey, I'm going out tonight. Before I do, I'm going to pregame with a Simply Lemonade.
The fuck out of here.
Oh, he's got to get his electrolytes 5% alcohol, so it's nothing to be trifled with.
You mean in a can that's the size of a wine glass. What have you been up to?
I watched an awesome kung fu comedy called Dirty Ho. Very like I thought it was just a funny name, you know. So I gave it a gander, and stacked cast, awesome director or legendary director, and the dynamic between the two leads was really cool. It was like it kind of reminded me of Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor in like Silver Streaks or something.
Richard Pryor to what?
What do you mean?
You said Richard Pryor. What was Richard in before?
I mean, like the duo. Oh my God! I know what you're talking about now. Jesus Christ, Brendan. It was Superman.
When we do these Saturday episodes, we get a little goofy.
Oh my God!
Kyle turned his camera on just to show his distaste.
God.
And back off.
I'll keep it on, but I'm not happy about it.
But yeah, Kyle, great movie. Dirty Ho.
Face.
Can
Dirty Ho.
Recommend.
That's awesome. Kyle, what about you?
I've been dying. I've been sick the past couple days. Diarrhea, vomiting, the whole nine. Fever, chills. So I haven't been watching really anything lately. I've been like passively like putting things on YouTube in the background while I'm like trying to concentrate on being alive. Just something I could like
holding on to the light.
Yeah, kind of like just like narrowing in on my thoughts, but having like background noise while I do it. I haven't even been playing games, nothing. I haven't had the focus, the energy, nothing. But I'm looking to get over it, you know, and get back on the train.
It sucks you don't have like a bathroom or like a bathtub shower.
Do you want those shit in the tub?
I do. I have two bathrooms. So the one I've been destroying is Dom's because I thought it was funny. So I've just been annihilating her bathroom. Yeah. And that's where the puking took place too. So okay. The puking number two combo. So,
The number two
of 2024.
And you said you had a story of when you had a dilemma.
The great dilemma. Yeah. 2024. I wouldn't recommend being in this position, but let's just say it was an aggressive number two to the point of uncontrollable, nonstop. Please stop me if it gets too much for you.
No, we are not stopping you.
Good, good. And in the midst of that happening, I had to throw up. It was one of those situations that I think has only happened once in my life where it was good to come out of both ends at the same time. That's only happened to me one other time in my entire life. And I had a choice. In my mind, I had to quickly do a calculation of the situation, right? So in my head, I was like, it's coming up. I'm gonna throw up. So I could use the toilet covered in fecal matter. Which you're gonna get spray back, right? So that seemed like bottom of the list, honestly. That seemed like a no-go. The second option, which seemed a little higher on the list, was to do a quick flush, let the backside hang out a little bit, you know, get some fresh air after it kind of conquering the bathroom, and throw up. But then it also occurred to me that, like, I'm kind of a germaphobe, and throwing up right in the midst of the flush and the smell of everything, it didn't seem right, you know? Yeah,
the poop is in the air.
The poop is in the air. And finally, I was like, you know what? Best case scenario right now is I've destroyed the toilet. I might as well destroy the shower. So I threw back the curtain, blew it out, and then just washed it out. And it was good. It was like it never happened.
Make it clear, when you say blow it out, you meant you threw up in the bathtub. You didn't do a second shit in the bathtub.
Yes, that's correct. And let me just be frank with you here.
Wait, or Kevin. I thought you were Kevin.
Let me just be Kevin with you. I'm a 34-year-old man, so this is not something I take pride in. It's not a situation that I want to be in, but it was unavoidable. But I tried to make the best of it, and here I am.
So when you told us this earlier, mm-hmm. it confused me, but I wanted to wait for us to talk about it. Sure. Because whenever I throw up, I automatically shit myself. And I
every
thought
time.
I thought that was kind of a
like hand in hand situation.
Yeah. So I'm
automatically.
Yeah. It's just like I can't control it.
I mean, teach his own. Teach his own, you know?
Okay, but, I thought it was an everyone thing where you just kind of shit yourself.
No. Even talking about it right now is just starting to be nauseous. But I will say that I think it's like food poisoning. The last thing I remember eating were these frozen sushi rolls from Trader Joe's. And I think that's what did me in. It had to be something wrong with those. It's a weird coincidence that I could have just gotten this stomach flu out of nowhere because I felt fine the next day or the previous day. So I think that was the culprit, honestly.
Interesting. Well, I hope you're on the mend.
I feel like I am.
Good. You were able to eat dinner today.
Yeah, I'm holding it down so far.
So far.
If there's an abrupt pause and a mute on the mic, you'll know something's changed. But until then, I'm here.
Well, we're happy
Brennan,
to have
what
you
have
here.
You been up to?
What have I been up to? I watched... I wasn't sure if I wanted to talk about Feast or Psycho Goreman. Because...
¿Por qué no los dos? That means, why not both?
Okay, well, I'll make it quick then. Feast was written by Marcus... Patrick Melton and Marcus Dunstan, the guys that wrote today's movie, actually. And it definitely suffered from a very mid-2000s script with the snappy wannabe Tarantino dialogue and some very, very bad music video editing, and not in a fun way. But the creatures and the blood and Henry Rollins and Judah Friedlander and Jason Mewes was in it for a few minutes. It was overall a very, very fun time. I don't know if you guys ever saw Feast, but
that's one on my list for sure. I think I know it came out on the Sci-Fi Channel, and it was like a pretty big thing. But I
could see that.
Never got to it.
And Psycho Goreman, fantastic. Big fan of Astron 6. The Void is fantastic. I don't know if you saw that, Kyle. It's a fun.
Is that the one with the triangle?
Yes. Yeah.
Face? No, I never saw it.
That's good. The Editor is fun, but I finally watched Psycho Goreman, and I was very pleasantly surprised because it really toes the line of being a very good piece of accessible horror that like you could watch with like a cool 13-year-old kid. But also there's just like the insane gore and violence, and that would obviously be a detractor to that. So I really like how it toes the line of being accessible and then just being excessive.
Dude, if I would have been in high school back in like 06 and rented that from a Blockbuster, I would have been fucking jacked. Like that would have been an awesome Blockbuster movie to bring home and watch. It's got such like a Saturday morning cartoon vibes. And I just love everything from the practical effects are awesome. And even like the non-practical effects are like, they're not done in a way that that ruins the film. It's like very creative. Yeah. And I like it a lot. It's funny too.
It is. It's very funny. That girl is such a good actor.
Mm-hmm. I like them all. Like I'm not a big fan of child actors usually.
Mm-hmm.
They usually annoy the shit out of me. But those two in that movie are so likable, and I think they're really great.
And you and I both agree that the guy that plays the dad in Psycho Goreman, Ian, I'm not sure what your thought is, but the dad in Psycho Goreman is so good.
He had me cracking up.
Yeah, everyone. Especially about the practicals. Those look amazing.
So
it's crazy how a film like that, I don't know the budget of it, but that a film like that could have so much love and it could look so great compared to like a $100 million Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, because with a Marvel movie, there's a deadline and there's things you have to do. Not that there's not a deadline with, but like, when you plot the movies out 10 years in advance, you have to hit deadlines and you have to give up creativity for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we're not here to talk about those things. No. We are here. Oh, before we get any further, we should say congratulations to Dylan for winning first quarter, I guess that's what we're calling it, the first quarter sweepstakes.
Mm-hmm.
And shout out to Reaps and AC Royals for getting the most points. So because of that, we're also sending them a little something. So our second quarter has kicked off. We're doing things pretty much the same. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. For right now, we're going to add some stuff in the midst of Ian's got some stuff rolling with these polls and stuff that we're going to do, but that's going to happen soon.
Nice. So if you guys want to win some cool stuff, join our Discord, and congrats to Dylan. It was a surprise to all of us.
he got third place in terms of points. So I'm, I think everyone got a really good prize. All the top three contestants.
Mm-hmm.
So I think everyone made out.
To be announced.
Yes. But today we are here to continue our franchise deep dive into the Saw films.
And how do you feel that we're almost halfway done? Or we're about halfway done?
We're there.
I'm happy.
Are you sad that we're like five episodes away roughly from never talking about Saw again?
I thought you were going to say that we got the good ones out of the way.
No. I mean, maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But we are here to talk about Saw 5. And trust me, Kyle, when Saw 11 comes out in 2025, Ian and I are going to make you talk about it. You know that.
We're all going to go see it together.
Oh,
that's what's going to happen.
Hell yeah. But before we get into our discussion about Saw 5, let's get into some... I realize we probably shouldn't have made the sick guy do that.
It's fine.
Saw 5 is the fifth installment in the Saw franchise. It is written by Saw 4 writers Patrick Melton and Marcus Dunstan and directed by Saw 2, 3, and 4 production designer David Hackle in his feature directorial debut. On a budget of $10.8 million, Saw 5 would bring in $118.2 million. Unlike all of the previous Saw films, Saw 5 was eviscerated by critics and was the first Saw film to not have a first place box office opening weekend, marking this as the downfall of Saw's first wave, and I would argue that we're in the second wave of Saw films, and we'll see this over and over and over again until we all die. While there was a blood drive to promote this film like the previous films, this time, the NHL was also involved. See, Saw producer Orrin Coles happens, to be the owner of the Tampa Bay Lightnings. So for two whole weeks, the team's goalies wore Saw-themed masks, and then they were auctioned off. I'm not sure where the money went to.
That is awesome. And what year did this come out? So they won
2008,
the Stanley Cup, I believe, 2 years prior.
So 2008. Cool. Yeah. If you go to the Saw 5 IMDb trivia, you'll be able to find the names of the two goalies that wore the masks.
That's awesome.
Saw 5 would continue Melton and Dunstan's soap operatic police drama with the conclusion of the Hoffman-Strom subplot as well as the introduction of the Erickson subplot. Initially, William Forsythe of Devil's Rejects fame was set to play Erickson but had to pull out. That's when Alien star Mark Rolston took the spot. One of the highest points of praise for Saw 5 is the traps. Many people say that it has the best traps in the franchise. That may be in part to two specific traps, the human juice box and the trash compactor. Those are my names. I forget what the actual names are. And they are both Peter Strom traps. The head in the box is one of Saw's most iconic traps, due in part to Scott Patterson's insistence on doing it all himself. This gave the camera free range for 360-degree shooting and adds authenticity that many of these traps lack. When special effects crews started casting Scott Peterson's arms, he was curious and said, "Why are you casting my arms?" Well, it turned out he was not given the full script, and when he asked the person who was casting his arms, they said, "Wait, you don't know you die at the end of this movie?" And I think that's great. So, how do we feel about Ian's least favorite Saw movie?
Oh, I'm interested in hearing about that.
Let's work as a team and each give our 2 pints.
I like it.
Instead of my two cents.
I like it.
So, all right, let us. I feel like we all kind of know how Ian does feel.
I want to start with Ian.
Okay, we'll start with Ian. Ian, where'd you watch it? I know it's in your collection, so you don't have to answer that.
Oh, I'm going to answer. Yeah, if you talk about that shitty collection.
What are your...
I got to live with it, all right? Well, we both do, honestly.
Yeah. Your initial thoughts, and can you remember the first time you watched it?
So, watch this on the good old 3-for-1. 3-for-1 Blu-ray. No special features. I don't even think there's closed captions, but
there is closed captions. I can confirm that. I use them.
I don't know what I was on when I gave my Letterboxd review. Cause this movie's not bad at all.
Let's fucking go.
It's really not bad. And I like this a lot more than Saw 4. For sure. Saw 4 is my least favorite as of right now, if we're ranking them. Like the traps. I do think the transitions are better in the other films, but there's a couple in this that are really, really cool and very seamless and practical. They're all done practical. I like Strom. I like their little cat and mouse game.
So cute.
It's adorable. And the traps. Yeah, traps are good too. So I completely changed my mind from, wow, I think two or three years ago when I logged this. So yeah.
So what you're saying is my fear facts was fear unfactual.
Fear unupdated.
Wow. Okay. That is a surprise that I don't think anyone saw coming.
I didn't see.
Kyle. Well, actually, I can't ask you if you remember. Oh, wait, Ian, you didn't answer. Do you remember when you first watched it?
I think I actually watched this for the first time on Dead Me, and I think that's a reason why I don't really watch him too much anymore, because I confuse movies that I've actually seen with movies that I've just watched a video from him, and he's very thorough with his film when he reviews a film, so it does confuse me. But I think it was like immediately after I saw the Dead Meat for this film.
Okay. Kyle, how did you watch it? We're going to save our franchise current rankings until the end, I should say. So Kyle, how did you watch it and what are your first thoughts?
Well, how I watched it, I have the same compilation thing that Ian has.
Compilation.
For lack of a better word. I'll always tie this viewing to the great sickness of 2024 now. So it'll always have a special place in my heart that way. I watched it for the first time today. And I'm just gonna say it. I won't put it in which order yet, but I like this movie a lot.
Yeah.
This is Ian,
this is going so much better than I ever thought it was going to go.
This is my kind of Saw. All right. And let me tell you why.
Please. Please.
As Ian knows already, I'm a big detective kind of crime solving kind of shit, right? I'm way into that. Sorry, I'll try to articulate better. I haven't done anything but throw up in like 3 days. okay, so I think that this movie could have done without the carry through of the Saw traps at all. I think it could have just been a Strom versus Hoffman movie and been totally okay with it. Like, I didn't need any of the filler. I'm going to say it filler of the Saw traps in between the scenes of them putting together the pieces. What I like about a few of these Saw films as we go along is how they always tie it back to previous Saw films. And I loved seeing how Hoffman actually had a way bigger role than even
Strom.
No, what's her name?
Amanda.
In a lot of ways. The way it depicts this film anyway. Hoffman was almost like the true successor to Jigsaw. The transitions are great. When they go back to the wire kill trap from Saw 1 and Strom is sitting there investigating it, and then the camera pans and it immediately cuts to the flashback of Jigsaw walking down the stairs. That wasn't an overly outrageous transition like in Saw 4, but it was subtle and effective. A lot of this movie is subtle and effective. I think the acting is good. Yes. The first Saw film where actually the acting is good.
Yes, I'm not disputing that.
The acting is pretty good in this film. I like it. I'm a big Strom fan. I like his character a lot. I was sad to see him go. But overall, this movie was my cup of tea. And I will have to say that like the guillotine Saw trap in the very beginning, like literally, like I don't get queasy or anything, but like after it was over, I was like, I literally said out loud, I was like, Jesus Christ. Because it was kind of intense, dude. It was pretty intense. Like, but yeah, no, I liked it a lot.
This is so fun. I like this.
And to Ian's credit, he kind of called it. He said I would probably like this film because it's wrong.
Oh yeah,
that's true. So. That's true.
What is cinema?
You could do it. Just do it.
Sorry, no, I stole it from you.
No, that's good. That's good. I Kyle, the one thing that I will disagree with is how you said that, how you kind of inferred that Hoffman was the true successor. I might be marred by some later on information, but I feel like this film is Hoffman doing his first big trap. Mm-hmm. It, like, this is top to bottom. He gets the people, he sets them up, he sets the thingies up. And I appreciate this film as a vehicle where kind of Saw 3 is Amanda's movie, this is Hoffman's movie. Yes.
The only reason why I feel that way is because, and maybe it's just because they never depicted it, but Jigsaw never really confides in Amanda. I keep forgetting her name. Is that
yeah.
Her name?
Yeah.
Never confides in Amanda like he does Hoffman. Like, he kind of, like, you never see a man or like him talk about Hoffman to Amanda, but like you kind of have a little bit more of like a personal rapport, it seems, with those two, almost like a father son kind of dynamic. Whereas this film almost made Amanda look like a backup, or almost like a side piece. Not like that though, but like,
I see, like, what you're saying.
I do want to say to that point, I feel like Hoffman was just, he was already there. He didn't really need the kind of thing. He already like made his own saw trap. Like, so he saw the potential.
Ian, I was going to say, kind of ping ponging off both of you. So would you say then that he was more mentoring Hoffman and grooming Amanda?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay. He might have been grooming Amanda to be Hoffman's disciple.
Yeah. Okay. This movie really made it seem like Amanda was always going to be the number two.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, at least to me, that's how I interpreted it.
So to finish this out before I get into my first question, I think the Strom trap with his head in the box is the most effective, brilliantly shot, edited, lit, acted trap that there is. And like I said in the Fear Facts, I think part of that is due to the fact that Scott Patterson did it himself. And he put, there's a really great behind the scenes of this trap. And just to watch him go through this water trap over and over and over again is insanely impressive.
I like the trap. I'm just not a fan of the overall principle and setup of it. Like, and what I mean by that is Strom was never really given a chance. And I guess that's the whole point. Mm-hmm. It's because he's trying to murder him. But that seems like against what Jigsaw would want. Like, he was never given a tape. He was never given a choice. He just wakes up and it starts happening.
And I think that kind of shows because in this movie, in Saw 5, we're supposed to see Hoffman growing and learning that he has to make traps that people can succeed, which is why Hoffman is the one that is given these five people in a trap. He's given these specific people because they have to work together to succeed. And if we look at the very first trap with Seth, that's unwinnable. So this trap with Strom that's going on the same time, that's going on right before these five people, it's showing that he still hasn't changed. He's still putting people in unwinnable traps.
Yeah, I agree with that actually now that you're saying that, because sometimes I forget the continuity of these films because they jump around so much. Yeah. So that trap is actually more towards the beginning when he's still initially kind of starting. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that makes sense.
Can I ask you something, Kyle? Because Ian and I have probably watched the franchise so many times. Does something about the back and forth continuity, even in one scene, like we were talking about earlier when Strom goes to look at the barbed wire trap and then Jigsaw walks down the stairs and stuff, as a first-time viewer, does that bother you? Do you learn to accept it? Do you just take it for what it is?
I take it for what it is because I know that's what Saw does.
Okay.
But I will say it's growing on me, definitely.
Okay.
Like, it's something that I used to look at it as kind of a gimmick, mm-hmm. and now I'm kind of like appreciating it a little bit more for what it's trying to do. I'm starting to see the puzzle pieces, pun intended, kind of connect. So, yeah.
I really like that transition. That's one of my favorites in the series so far.
And
it's
so
simple.
Yeah, it's so simple but effective. That's what I was saying. Is like, they don't need to do any adjustments. They just need to pan away from him. He was still in the room, but like, just by doing that, like, it makes it. It does a time lapse, but your mind does the time lapse for you based on the costumes Jigsaw's wearing and the situation at hand, even though it takes place in the same location, same lighting, same everything.
And it's so smart in terms of like in terms of budget as well. Like, you don't have to have the editing team go to another scene or transition. You can just pan the camera to the stairs and they just come down.
It takes literally minimal effort.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that takes a lot of effort because you also have to...
I'm not trying to take away from what they were doing. That's not what I mean. I'm just saying... In comparison to, like, the fucking shot in Saw 4 where they're jumping through a broken mirror. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's a little different.
I don't mean to jump us back to Saw 4, but there's one question that I've had on my mind, and I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on this. So in Saw 4... on the left side of the seesaw, you have Eric Matthews on the ice block hanging by his neck. On the right side, you have Detective Hoffman just sitting in a chair. Does the math of those two things add up to you to create a perfect seesaw?
No, he's a heavy boy. But I mean, there is the block of ice.
That block of ice has got to be heavy as fuck.
Yeah. Oh, wait. No. I mean... So it's Hoffman and a chair versus a giant block
that's
of ice.
A heavy chair.
Yeah.
That just shows how much of a beefy boy Hoffman is.
Oh, my God. Those big, beautiful fucking breasts. Oh, my God. And those lips. Oh, fuck.
That's where all the weight was.
Okay. Right. So before we get into the traps, there was one more question that I had for you guys. Do we label them as traps if they're unwinnable? Or do we label them as deadly predicaments? Because I feel I feel like calling Strom's head in the box a trap.
I think traps are traps. I think traps are traps. Whether they're winnable or not, they're traps. Oh. Personally.
That's so when opinion. You trap a mouse, mm-hmm. there's no possibility of them getting out, right?
I mean, it depends. Like, if they get their hand stuck on the glue trap, there's been like rats that have like chewed their hand off.
And never mind then.
Well, let's just go with the scenario you're trying to do.
You know, it's a trap's a trap. Is what I'm trying to say. If they get, I think they're traps. I like group traps, and we see these in more of these films. But this...
Wait, you said what? Group traps?
Group traps. Oh, so group, like multiple people trying to work together.
I thought you were saying like somebody's name. I was like, is there somebody I'm not knowing?
Yeah, the Despicable Me
group's
character.
Group's trap is so
from
good.
From Saw 6, so I haven't seen it.
But no, this one didn't really do it for me. The traps in every room are pretty weak up until... and so I didn't mean to jump the gun on the trap segment. Fine. Sorry.
It was a good transition.
But the final trap is really good.
Well, let's go through them in order, but real quick, let's play a little guessing game, and whoever gets this right will get an extra point in what's in the box. How many outside shots do you think there were in this movie?
Are we counting how many times they flash back to outside that building? Or is that just counted as one? Because they flash back to outside that building.
That's counted as one.
Okay.
Say like one.
I was gonna say maybe one. That's the only one I could think of.
Ian one, Kyle one. It is two. Mm. Oh, it's the when Hoffman comes out of the building with the girl.
Oh, gotcha.
And then that one that you guys were referring to. So we got two outside shots, and they're both at night. Look at that. They are
That's a Brennan approved.
That is That is a Brendan approved soul. So let's start with the with the first trap. And wait, oh, real quick, can I just tell you guys the trailers that played before this movie?
Oh, because you have the DVD, huh?
Yeah. So you had the trailer for My Bloody Valentine, the Sin City ripoff movie, The Spirit.
Oh, that movie's so bad.
I know.
That movie's so bad.
Repo, the Genetic Opera from Saw alum Darren Lynn Bousman.
Still haven't seen it.
The Midnight Meat Train. Yeah. Bangkok Dangerous with Nicolas Cage. Ooh. Right? Disaster Movie, My Best Friend's Girl, and then a duo trailer for Hulk versus Wolverine and Hulk versus Thor.
Yo, when Hulk versus Wolverine came out, I remember that specifically. It was fucking hype, dude. The hype was so real because those things weren't happening yet. It was pre-everything, pre-Marvel. And the animation, like, it's an animated one you're talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, dude, the animation was actually pretty fucking good. And I remember enjoying that movie quite a bit. Sorry.
So
you just brought back a memory out of my head.
A core memory.
Yeah, yes. A really core memory of me sitting in my room in high school.
Those were the trailers, and I enjoyed watching all of them, even though I'm never gonna watch the two Hulk versus movies. I was like, that's a good damn trailer. Okay, so the first trap we have is Seth, and that is what I'm calling the tummy tickler. And Seth is a Nazi who killed Hoffman's sister and got off on a technicality, which we hear about 50 goddamn times. Thoughts on this trap? Kyle, you said this one kind of made you a little nauseous.
I mean, I was already thrown off.
That's true.
Prior to the movie. But no, yeah, it's definitely intense. I would say it's probably one of the most intense traps in the franchise so far. I mean, from a visual standpoint.
I will say this trap this time, I don't remember it being as bloody or as like visceral. It was very, very gory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I also remember the finger crushers, those being a little more prevalent in this film, which they were not. It kind of just like stomps on his hand and then just comes up.
He's like,
oh, what?
So and I don't want to, I'm trying not to do a point for point here, but Kyle, since you really like the detective subplot, and this is my favorite detective subplot of all the Saw movies, I kind of just want to make these points. So this is where after that we get the Saw 3 and Saw 4 finale again. And we see that Strom is told not to continue or to stay in the room that he is, or he'll meet his death. Mm-hmm. And he powers through and goes on. So that this is kind of the first test that
so
we
is this,
get.
So is Saw 5 before Saw 3 and 4?
No, it's or right before, at the end.
It's right at the end. Yeah. So it is, okay.
Yeah, this is like literally minutes after. So we get that. So we get that little character moment from Strom, and we have a similar character mirroring that goes on with Hoffman that I want to ask you about later on when we get to it. But then we get to the second trap, which is Strom's the juice box. I feel like that's a bad name. I couldn't think of a good name.
I love it.
Which one is that?
That's when Strom's head is in the bucket.
Oh, the cube?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he like
that's the second
stabs
one?
His neck, yeah. like a juice box.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I get it now.
So as someone who enjoyed the detective subplot of it, what was your thought when you saw his like police brain kick in and like I would freak out. I wouldn't know what to do in this situation. And he just turns on cop brain, gets his pen and trakes himself.
Yeah, it only increased my love for Strom. I think it was practical in a sense that if somebody is trained in a certain way, that could be mentally an option that they would go to.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a fear of drowning, so that would be fucking super rough for me personally, that trap, even though it's not really painful until the end. Mm-hmm. I still think it's effective, and yeah, no, I thought it was really cool that he was able to get out of that. I'm glad it didn't stop there, and I'm glad it propelled him to continue his investigation.
I want to say the box coming up to the screen on a complete black.
Forgot about that. Yeah,
fucking amazing. Again, another such simple thing that they probably could have made the screen like this size and then just expanded it to make it look like it's coming at
another us. Movie's done that. That's a callback to something. Another movie's done that, and I'll find it. But it reminded me of another movie I've seen.
It feels like a... Yeah.
Like the exact thing. No, like, I promise you, like, the exact thing happens. I just don't remember which one it is.
Do shots like that and the transitions and stuff kind of make you guys question why this is the only Saw movie David Hackle directed?
That's a big question. I mean, I think that maybe it was just bad.
Kyle, for your awareness, Saw 6 and Saw 7 are directed by Kevin Greudert, who is the editor for like all the Saw movies.
Gotcha. I think there's a couple factors that could be involved. I mean, it could be franchise fatigue by this point. Maybe people were getting tired of it. I don't really know how Saw 4 did, but it could be that. Because I imagine initially, if there was a lot of hype off of Saw 4, it'd be a no-brainer to see Saw 5. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a part of that hype. So I don't think it was his directing necessarily that would have stopped this film from making money. Because the initial sales were all great with Saw. So it could be a Saw 4 factor. It could be a timing factor, franchise factor. I don't think it's the like him as a director necessarily.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
And I don't have an answer to that. It's a pretty loaded question. But I mean, I feel like it could have been. I feel like I don't know. I don't know any context behind it.
Would I have liked to see more of his style in another Saw film? Yeah, definitely. But I mean, I haven't seen the other ones yet, so
that's true.
I think this movie is just impressive in terms of like cost cutting. That's what mostly impresses me from this film. Like the simple transition, simple editing, stuff like that.
Putting the money to the things that actually need money.
Definitely. Yeah.
I get that. So in the interim, until the next trap, we get Detective Hoffman promoted to Detective Lieutenant. And when he's giving his speech, he says, quote, "Life should be cherished. Justice is the backbone of society." How do you not hear that and say, wait a second?
He's like, "I got this promotion just on a technicality." Like, if you say technicality one more time, dude, I'm gonna lose my mind.
There's another line when Detective Hoffman is in Strom's hospital room, where Strom is like, "How'd you get out of that building?" And Costa or Hoffman's like, "How'd you?" "On a fucking gurney with a hole in my neck."
He's like, "You got some beautiful lips and great pecs, and just
you
a couple
of beautiful lips and gorgeous eyes are gonna save you." "Think again, I'm coming after you, man."
So, Ian, you said you like the group traps. Talk about the start of the opening of the group trap with the head splitter. I don't have a good name for this one either.
Yeah, I can't think of a name either, but I like that it gives little mystery behind like the one dude who knows mm-hmm. everyone and how they like slowly start to connect the dots and why they're all there, which is something that Saw 2 just gave immediately, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, it did it?
Not immediately,
but it was pretty close, and then they figured it out like at the final trap in this film. But the characters could have been a little more extra for me. There is an absolute hottie who is in Dexter.
Yeah.
Julie Benz,
yeah.
Oh, have you guys seen the Boondock Saints 2?
Yeah, unfortunately.
She plays the redhead in that. My God, she's amazing.
Yeah, shout out to her. Now that we're on the topic for Saw, which wigs are the worst?
Oh my God.
Hers wasn't that bad in this one, I'll have to say, because every Saw has a bad wig. This one's not too bad. It does go against her natural skin complexion. It's a little too dark, a little too straight. She looks like she's wearing the wig of a 15-year-old Asian girl, but she doesn't look bad. She doesn't look bad in it. I'll give this one a pass. Saw 5 gets a wig pass.
Oh.
So I'm doing the outside shots.
And you're I'm doing the wig passes.
Ian, we got to figure out your thing.
Yeah, okay. To Kyle's point, actually, this has the most memorable wig for me.
Mm. Which one?
Her.
Her? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Because like it just doesn't look right, like
as, no, as it looks so it looks so off.
Yeah,
it looks so off. It looks like CG almost. Looks like a CG wig.
Yeah.
So up next we have trap number 4: the glass jars above the ceiling. It's kind of a nothing.
Yeah. Next trap.
Next trap.
It was too easy to call out. Like that all these traps were super important. Like when they climbed into the like 25-foot yeah. tunnel hallway with one thing, yeah. I'm like, dude, you all could fit in there. What are you guys freaking out about? Open one gate and walk in there. I think they played into the they all hate or they're all so selfish a little mm-hmm. too much. Yeah. Like I think it was a little too heavy-handed, but yeah. that trap was lame.
And
in my opinion.
The characters weren't even like sharks or anything. They weren't like money hungry. Crazy people. They were like they just have ordinary jobs.
They were money hungry.
They killed 8 people.
One of them knew the 8 was in there though, right? 50.
Like, but they were all complicit. They sure. they didn't do their due diligence.
You're right. Sure.
You're right.
Trap number 5, which is Hoffman's shotgun to the neck trap. So he goes to that derelict building, Jigsaw, John Kramer takes him down. That's he wakes up with the shotgun. Killing, but Ian, I'll let you do it.
Yeah. Killing is distasteful to me.
Meanwhile.
Oh, shit. So this is where we get Jigsaw finally calling Hoffman out for the Seth Baxter trap. At the beginning, and this is a very pivotal moment. Talk about Kyle seeing this for the first time. I mean, obviously, you knew that Hoffman was involved in some way, but seeing,
yeah, since like Saw 2 or since Saw 3 or whatever.
But seeing that, how did you take that scene?
I mean, I already knew, so like the. There was no like grandeur to it or anything. Like
all he had to do was pull the loops out.
Yeah. This movie made me like Hoffman. Let's just put it that way. I wasn't a fan of him in the previous film. I feel like he was super over. I feel like just everything about the last film was over dramatic. But I feel like Hoffman as a character. I'm going on a little bit of a tangent, so I'm sorry. But I feel like Hoffman was a lot more grounded in this film. So I think that that scene was actually kind of super rich in like story progression and a character moment, because I think the acting was really good between the two. Whenever him and Jigsaw were on screen together, I was eating it up. I think that this is the first Saw film. And I'm saying this realistically. I'm not trying to throw shade or anything.
Of course.
I think this is the first Saw film where I wasn't on my phone, at least during one part of the film. Like, it had my full concentration, and every time they were both on screen together, I was kind of electrified. I think that they make a good on-screen duo. Like, and I thought that whole exchange was really cool.
Ian, I want to ask you. This film does a very good job of setting up the intrigue of the drama between the police. We have Hoffman doing all these very small things that, at the end of the film, are going to make Strom look guilty. Of being an accomplice. Do you remember your very first time kind of experiencing, because as someone who's seasoned, you've probably kind of been desensitized to the story because you know exactly which direction it's going. Do you kind of remember the first time? Well, I think you might have answered this a little bit earlier, but do you remember the first time like you were kind of witnessing Hoffman's character be a police officer, but in a very bad fucking way?
Yeah. And again, it was the hoops thing that got me. But I think I didn't like this film because of how much it flipped between the past and the present. Mm. And like how far back and like the not so past of the last film. But but it was cool to see that he was there from the start. Like he took the pen from the doctor. Mm-hmm. That's a cool thing to add. And I do like, I don't know why I didn't notice it, my first watch, but I like how in this film it, says that, he did that first trap for his sister, which, you know, gives more sympathy for the guy. And I think that's kind of why we like him a little more. And he's also like, he's just so prissy and he's just. I don't know. Whenever he's on screen, he just takes up the screen, you know?
Because he's so fucking
huge. Because he's so fucking huge.
Because those lips. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay, so then we get to the bathtub scene. again, I couldn't think of a name for it. It's fine. They kill the woman, and then they use her body as a conduit.
Shit was funny.
all right. Trap number seven. I called it five in one hand. I thought that was a fun play on six in one hand.
Hold on, going back to the bathtub really quick. Okay. Why treating her as a conduit? Or like, I get that, right? But like, why at the end, like the last spike, they're like,
it has to go in her head.
You gotta stick it in her head. I was like, why do you have to stick it in her head?
Well, the electromagnets are
any part of the body will do, but you gotta slam in there for dramatic effect.
Yeah, of course.
That whole trap was just kind of silly to me.
Yeah. But okay, so trap number five. This is one trap away from the best trap. We get everyone has to put their hands in, and we really find out that it's supposed to be all five of them, and it's just the two of them again. This is more a trap of, do you have the willpower to push your hand into this thing or not?
Britt was playing weak, dude. That guy was literally cutting his arm in half all the way up to his shoulder.
Although,
my fingernail.
Put your freaking hand in.
She literally took her hand out, like her fingernail was off. Like, you cheap bitch.
Let's say, though, because he did put the hand in there that was burnt from the fire. So do you think he had pain receptors in that hand?
Based on his reaction, yes.
Or was he faking it?
Why would he fake it?
To make her feel better. To fake it.
Yeah, to make her feel bad.
Yeah, I don't think he gave a shit about her.
Like, you're like, do you think he could feel it? Meanwhile,
I like the aftermath of their.
It splits.
Yeah,
yeah, that's cool.
That is a great shot. All right, so then we get to the final trap, the trash compactor, Strom's grave, the end of Hofstrom, which is the ship name that everyone on Twitter uses for them. Mm. Ian, you have been alluding to this trap for like three episodes, and we finally got it. Is this everyone's favorite? I think between this and the cube are my two favorites of the movie.
Star Wars, man. The ultimate throwback, the ultimate homage. What more can you give, you know?
I'm not getting the reference.
He's talking about the trash compactor scene in Star Wars.
Yeah.
I think one of the droids are like in the trash compactor and it's like closing in on him. Mm-hmm. Like this is the moment that this is what happens. Oh, it's so cool. But back to the last trap, I just want to mention, I think it would be cool if they all like had a little scar to like remember all their time at the traps. Anyways, if all five
I survived the jigsaw trap and all I got was this stupid scar.
But
I don't know if any, sorry, Ian, to interrupt you really quick, just because you kind of already went back. I don't know if there's any significance to these people. I know that sometimes they carry stuff on without alluding to it. Yeah. So I will say that like all this trap, the reason why I called it like a filler, because it seems so throwaway, like all these people, like it seemed like it it didn't need to be in it. It was just in it because it's a Saw movie and they had to have Saw traps based on the franchise. But maybe they come back. I don't know. That's it. I just wanted to say a rant. That's it.
You're talking about the final one?
They do or not.
I'm talking about the last two people.
Oh, he's talking about the group. And
no, they don't.
Goes over the 8 people that they killed in a burning building. Mm-hmm. And I don't know.
She gets out and they just never go back to her?
She is in another Saw, isn't she?
No.
No?
No.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Not yet, at least.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. I think that this final scene, because the whole movie, you have Jigsaw keeps saying to Hoffman, you have to basically be able to accept all possibilities of the outcome. And Hoffman leaves all these breadcrumbs for Strom, where Strom can either do A or do B. And he always does B, and it always gets him in trouble. So I love this moment of Hoffman realizing the type of character, that's the type of person that Strom is, and he sets it up so that there's no way that Strom is going to survive this.
Yeah, I get that's the whole like theme where it's like, if you can anticipate human nature, then you'll never be wrong. I get that. But what was his end game if he didn't? What if he went in the box? What would he do?
It doesn't matter because what...
Would he have sealed him inside anyway? That would
No, I don't think so. What
would he have done?
The whole time, the whole purpose of Saw 5 is for Hoffman to figure out what Strom's personality is, because in 3, I think 3 or 4 is when Strom and Perez are introduced. And this whole time, this is a wrench thrown in Hoffman's plan. So the entire time, he's laying this groundwork of how he can get these two people out of his life and out of his investigation. And I like this idea of Saw 5 is Hoffman just basically testing in so many different ways Strom that he can. And he makes it so that he's going to give Strom an option that he knows he's not going to take.
No, I get that. That's what I liked about it too. But I'm saying, let's just play alternate universe. What would he have done if he got in the box?
Probably would have shot him in the head.
I think, because he left the door open for a long time. Like he knew he was in there, just waiting for him. I think that was just his test. But if he went in the box, he was in there, so it wouldn't have. But let's just pretend here. I see what you're saying, Kyle. You gave me the face. Let's pretend.
No, I was just trying to breathe. I'm kind of dying right now. I'm just trying to hide it.
Then there would be no Saw 6, right?
Yeah. No, I. There's no way that Hoffman.
There's still
would
one
let
more character.
Strom go.
That's missing.
I think that Hoffman hasn't learned, and I still don't think that he would have let Strom go.
I do think that is a ultra John Kramer move, though, to have that where he comes in and he anticipates that he's going to push him into the box. That's such a John.
It's the whole theme of the movie, anticipate human nature. Yeah. And to Brennan's point, he was doing tests the whole movie, and he's like, yep, he's going to do that. Yep, he's going to do that. And then he's definitely going to do that. 100%.
The rule of threes.
That was a very inarticulate way to say that, but you get what I'm saying.
But so then the film ends with probably one of the worst delivered lines in a Saw movie. And it's Special Agent Erickson, who says, "I want you to put out an APB. Suspect's name is Peter Strom." "Yeah, that's right. Special Agent Peter Strom." Do-do-do. Such a stupid fucking line delivered awfully, and I love it.
No, look, game over.
He was just happy to be there.
He was happy to be nominated. Yeah, this is the first Saw film to not end with game over.
That's crazy.
That's probably why they fired him.
I don't know how I feel.
That's
about
probably
that,
why they fired
I don't like
him.
That. I don't like that, honestly.
That's why they didn't bring him back, Kyle. Yeah, the director. But why didn't they bring him back?
That's why.
You ended it with what?
You ended it with Special Agent Peter Strom.
Get the fuck out of here. You're fired.
But that is Saw 5. And I say, before we get into our franchise ranking, is there anything else you guys wanted to say about Saw 5? All right. So before we get into our franchise ranking and our official scores of the movie, we are going to take a Ruminations of Red Rum Thick Piss break. Please enjoy a word from some of the other shows on the Ruminations Radio Network.
What's up, gang? This is Hoptimus. You've been listening to one of the great new podcasts from Ruminations Radio Network. If you want some more tasty sound vibes, come check out my new podcast, The Retro Futurist Culture, where we talk about alternate timelines, cyberpunk, anime, and other crazy worlds. If that does not strike your fancy, we have plenty of other great shows at ruminationsradionetwork.com.
And welcome back, folks. I hope that was a very, very good piss for you. Ian, we're going to throw it over to you. Give us your franchise ranking up to Saw 5, and then your final thoughts and rating.
All right. I'm gonna start at the end. Okay. We're gonna go four. We're gonna go one.
Damn.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were giving me, when you said I'm gonna start from the back, I thought you were giving me your rating.
My least favorite to favorite. That's what I'm
gonna, oh, okay.
I'm
I thought now. Okay. All right, so least favorite four, is four.
One. We're gonna go five. Two, three.
Wait, you like three more than two now?
Yeah, this is a change.
Yeah. Wait, where did that even come from?
I don't know. Yeah, listening to the episode, it changed my mind. I don't know. I really do like it. It is the most, as Brendan put it, the most Saw out of the Saw.
What he's saying is we bullied him into it.
Yeah, pretty much. Fair enough.
I'm glad you've been converted on our side, Ian.
Hell yeah. And so what is your rating for Saw 5?
Rating, the budget thing really impressed me. Creating simple yet great shots. I like the acting. I like the cat and mouse game. The middle section kind of weighs it down. The group trap. I'm gonna give this a 7 with a heart, or a 3.5 with a heart. Jesus. 3.5. I haven't done that in a long time. I'm sorry. 3.5 with a heart.
Kyle, if you would like to be like Ian and start with your least favorite up to your favorite, you can go that route.
Yeah. Least favorite, easy Saw 2. No question. No question. Saw 2, least favorite. So let's see. Saw 2.
Mm-hmm. Use it.
Saw 4.
Saw 4.
Saw 1.
I knew it.
Saw 4. Or wait. Saw 5. Saw 5, Saw 3.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. So in correct order, it's 3, 5, 1, 4, 2.
Okay. And what is your rating for this movie?
This movie had the potential to be a 4 for me. I want to give it a 4. I still do want to give it a 4, honestly. If it wasn't for the unnecessary Saw, and I know that sounds crazy, but I think the unnecessary filler of the Saw traps with the group is just so, it's not needed. It wasn't needed. This should have been a cat and mouse game. They should have fully committed to it. That was a big detractor for me. I wasn't into that at all. So I'm going to have to give it a 3.5 and a heart.
I'm going to say two words, and I hope that it can put you up 0.5 to a 4.
I would love nothing more, Brennan.
Hoffman's lips. Okay, wait. Give me two more words.
I don't think those are
Hoffman's things. Breasts.
4. No, I'm kidding.
Damn it.
3.5 and a heart is where I stand.
Okay, let me just do my math real quick. So my rating, starting from the bottom, Ian, you really threw me off with this bottom thing.
Yeah, stupid.
It's not that crazy.
Least favorite. It's
going to go like a normal list, if anything.
It's going to go Saw 2, least favorite. Yeah, 100%. Saw 1. And this is where it gets tough. I'm going to say Saw 3, Saw 5, Saw 4.
Saw 3, Saw 5, Saw 4.
You like Saw 4 the most.
Yeah. And it's because of that ending time twist.
Mm-hmm.
And the death of Eric Matthews, and it's just, there's so much going on, and I love it. So for my rating, what is cinema? Is that bit's old already? I'm going to give it a 4 and a heart, which is even lower than, even though I've rated, yeah, whatever. You know what I'm trying to say. So that brings the official score to a 3.666, repeating with 3 hearts across the board. So that brings it down to a 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
3.5, that is Saw 5. Now, gentlemen, I want to play a game. And that game is What's in the Box?
Strom's Head.
Ben Strom's Head.
Extra point.
Extra point? What's in the Box is a game where... Oh, see, I don't have the thing pulled up this time. I usually do. I always have it pulled up. It's the game where we use the Letterboxd app, which aggregates a score based on users' reviews and ratings of movies. And so I will read the description of a movie, and my co-hosts will have to guess the average rating within 0.3 points. We will then go on to the next round, where they will have to guess the decade. And if they get the decade correct, they can get a chance at one more point if they guess the correct year. Gentlemen, are you ready?
See whatever.
You know, whenever I write my tallies down for this, Ian, I always write down E for you.
Checks out.
I it's just like the whole Ian with two E's thing. I don't know why. I've just always written it down that way.
Two E. I've been called E all my life. So,
number one, tagline, ... an act of vengeance. After a young writer is brutally... I didn't read this. Oh my God. After a young writer is brutally gang raped and left for dead by 4 men, she systematically hunts them down one by one to exact a terrible revenge. I think it means to enact a terrible revenge.
Gotcha. Yeah, that one was a little...
It's a little extreme.
A little bit of a dangerous summary there.
I'm going to go 2.8.
That's a good guess. I'm going to go 3.0.
You both get 1 point, but Kyle, you get 2 points. It is 2.8 on the dot. Guess. You're going to make him throw up.
Don't do that again.
You're going to make him throw up.
I don't have the strength to laugh at that, please. Oh,
it could be 80s, could be 2000s.
Could
be 2020s. No.
Could be 2020s. I'm going to say...
I'm going to go 2020s.
I'm going to say 80s. No. 70s. No. Yes, 70s.
70s. Ian, what did you say?
2020s.
Kyle gets another point. Guess the year.
Revenge stories were hot in the 70s, man, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Five.
You are incorrect. It is 1978's I Spit on Your Grave, directed by Mir Zarki.
Gotcha.
I think that's what his name is. Okay. number two tagline. If someone hurt someone you love, how far would you go to get revenge? A group of teenage girls heading into the city hook up with a gang of drug-addicted ne'er-do-wells and are brutally murdered. The killers find their way to the home of one of their victims' parents, where both father and mother exact a horrible revenge. Is it exact or enact?
Exact.
Enact?
I thought it was enact revenge.
You're probably right. I'm dumb. It might be enact.
You're not.
But both movies have had this, so I think I'm the one that's wrong.
I'm going to go. Anyways. 3.3.
That's a good guess. It's a really good guess. 3.0.
Ian, what did you say?
3.3?
3. Kyle gets a point. It is a 2.9 guess. The decade.
This is 80s.
80s. It's got it.
Yeah.
This 80s. Is 80s. 80s. You are both incorrect. It is the 2009 film, The Last House on the Left.
Damn, I thought it was the original.
Gentlemen, number three. It rests on 13 acres of earth over the very center of hell. A disturbed gang of youths kidnap, torture, and murder two teenage girls. Unbeknownst to the gang, the parents of one of the girls lives nearby.
3.3.
You going with that again?
Yep.
3.6.
Donuts. It is a 2.9. Guess. 2.9.
Damn.
The decade.
80s. 70s.
Yeah, yeah, that's a better guess. Yeah, I was going to guess the 70s, but since you guessed it, to make it interesting, I'll say 80s.
Ian gets a point. Guess the year.
79.
You are incorrect. It is the 1972 film, The Last House on the Left, directed by Wes Craven. The final one. Ian, you can still catch up. You can still catch up. Tagline, it's date night. Oh, that's an awful tagline. Jennifer is a writer working on a new novel, needing to get out of the city to finish it. Hires a riverside apartment in upstate New York to finish her book. That's an awful sentence. Attracting the attention of a number of rowdy male locals. That is awfully written. Do you want me to read it again?
I'm not going to lie. It was so bad, I almost forgot it.
Jennifer is a writer working on a new novel and, needing to get out of the city to finish it, hires a riverside apartment in upstate New York to finish her book, attracting the attention of a number of rowdy male locals.
So she hires an apartment complex?
This is going to be a 2.7. I'm going back.
Damn it. 3.3?
He could be throwing a curveball on the last one. It could be higher.
3.1.
3.1. Kyle, what did you say?
2.7.
Kyle gets 1 point. It is a 2.5. Unfortunately, Ian, that means that you are out. But just for shits and giggles, do you guys want to guess the decade?
Yeah, sure. Give me
Ian.
80s.
Ian. Oh, okay.
I was going to say 80s, dude.
You are both
you got it wrong, so
you are both incorrect. It is the 2010 film I Spit on Your Grave.
Oh, gotcha. You did the two in here. Okay.
You saw what I did there. Yeah. So Kyle, you take it 5 points.
Hell yeah. I'm better than Ian.
Detroit, baby. Rock City.
Rock City, indeed. Well, this has been another episode of Ruminations of Red Rum. The tracheotomy hole of the Ruminations Radio Network. If you like what we're doing here, please be sure to give us a follow on Twitter at Of Red Rum. That is OF Red Rum. And from there, you can find the link to our Discord. And like we were saying earlier, you can join an awesome sweepstakes. That's an awful word. Sweepstakes that we have going on. And also, be sure to give us a rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts. If you listen to us it would be very nice and we would appreciate it. We're still trying to hit 100. We're close. I don't know what number we're at. I gave up looking at the numbers because we're not at 100 yet. but that being said, with us, as always, he's spooky. Oh, nope. He's scary. And he's something. He's Ian. You threw me off with that.
I just shout out to Lou. He would have been a great Strom, I feel like. Right?
Definitely.
I don't know why that came to
me. I got out of there on a gurney.
Oh my god. Sound just like my uncle.
And also with us, it's Kevin.
People are going to really think my name is Kevin. Kevin with a K. Team Strom for life. Strom, you'll be missed. I love you. Rest in peace.
Hail Ratma and stay spooky.